Hey everyone, you're listening to the Embrace the Messy podcast with Shannon Schinkel. I'm a high school educator, challenge seeker, lifelong learner, and embracer of all things messy. I find inspiration from individuals who are passionate about learning and embracing change. Join me as I share my experiences and interview people who will inspire you to embrace the messy too. Let's go. Eric Francis runs Maverick Education, and he is an international author and presenter with over 25 years of experience working in education as a classroom teacher, a site administrator, an education program specialist, and a staff development trainer who produces and provides professional development, guidance, and support for teachers and school leaders. Eric is the author of Inquiring Minds Want to Learn, Posing Good Questions to Promote Student Inquiry, and Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, a Method and Model for Deeper Teaching and Learning. He is also the author of my favorite, now that's a good question, How to Promote Cognitive Rigor Through Classroom Questioning. I love Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, and I love, now that's a good question. Eric is ranked consistently as one of the world's top 30 education professionals by the research organization Global Gurus. He has also been named as one of the top global thought leaders for design thinking and future of work by Thinkers 360. And I can't believe he was so gracious and to come on the podcast. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, Shannon, where's your bit that you usually do at the start of the podcast? And you're right. Normally, I get on here and talk about something that resonates with me after having a conversation. But let me tell you, Eric and I got carried away and time slipped away from us. And when I say carried away, I mean carried away in the best way possible. I mean, we chatted for 15 minutes before I even hit record, and we had a little chuckle about that. And then even after I hit record, we were like two old friends chatting about education and learning, which is what we are both so passionate about. His energy is infectious, and I savored every single second of this. He is just one of those people who makes me want to be a better teacher. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Eric Francis as much as I did. This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode. Eric Francis, welcome to the Embrace the Messy podcast.
Hi, Shannon. Thanks for having me. Thanks for broadcasting down from the Great White North. Take off. Woo-hoo! How's it going, Eric?
It's a sunny, frosty day in Prince George, but I'm really grateful to have you on here so we can talk about good questions and depth of knowledge, two things I'm really passionate about. Before we dig into those two things, I want to, first of all, congratulate you on being one of the, again, top 30 gurus, global gurus in the educational professional category. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Having an impact.
Thank you. It's an honor to be listed with a lot of great people up there. In fact, Tom Herrick, who's up your way, he's number 8.
Woohoo. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, so it's great to see, like, you know, a lot of great people up, you know, to be included with that. I've been on it for the last 6 years. It's an honor. I appreciate that.
I also want to congratulate you for also being an Adam Grant and Simon Sinek fan. Because that's my forte. I love them. And I've heard you on another podcast talk about how you loved, you know, Start With Why, and you loved, not, you didn't mention Adam Grant's latest book, Hidden Potential, but the one before it. And you were speaking to me, boy.
Shannon, I'm telling you, I learned about, so the book you're talking about is Think Again by Adam Grant.
Yes,
So I'm
yes.
going to tell you a funny story with that. So Sean Galliard, who's a good friend of mine, he was talking about Hidden Potential. And I'm like, wow, okay, I think I have that in my Kindle. So the funny thing is that I read Think Again thinking that that's what Sean was recommending. That is the best mistake I've made, because I'll tell you, that book has transformed me. And I'm telling you, every educator, I mean, I know we're all reading Hidden Potential, and I know why we're reading Hidden Potential, and it's looking at that from the kids. And I've always had that perspective. I mean, I've been called, and I don't say this as something that is, bragging. It's actually not a blessing. It's sometimes a curse, unidentified gifted, because I was not a good test taker. But I have a lot of the things where I've been tested to say I'm adult, unidentified, gifted. And that's hard. So I always knew about that hidden potential. I like to call them zaggers. But that whole book really is what every educator needs to read right now, because a lot of us, unfortunately, out there, like it says in the book, we are preaching, we are prosecuting, and we've been a politician. And I've been two out of three. I'm not a good politician. Anyone who knows me out there knows that. I've been screaming, the DOK rule's inaccurate. DOK is about this. Then I've been sermonizing on that. And if you didn't listen to me, I'll scream louder. And then I got the evidence to prove it. So, man, I'm going to prosecute you and prove you wrong. I have gone about the wrong way. So now I'm thinking like the scientist. And my message to everybody out there is that I am asking everyone to rethink why we do how we do what we do. Recognize that from Simon Sinek. So I am asking, when I go into PDs now, I said, I am asking you to rethink why we do how we do what we do. And I used to say unlearn. And my friend Greg Walcott, who wrote a great book, Significant 72, he said, that's kind of negative. Let's think of a positive. So now I'm saying rethink and reconsider. So rethinking is me acting, asking, excuse me, asking. But reconsider is your action. And I, as a PD person, can't tell you to do that. That's your site leadership. Your site leadership needs to communicate to you. Eric came in, did a PD, did a workshop. He's asking us to rethink based upon new data and information or changing circumstances and conditions. As a leader, I'm wanting you to reconsider why you do, how you do, what you do, based upon the new data and information and changing circumstances, situations. So that's kind of been my message, and that's kind of my why for 2024, rethink and reconsider.
I think that's for someone like me who's I'm an assessment lead in my building, and I can get quite caught up in preaching, right? And telling people what they shouldn't do. I really like how you've reframed it into something positive, and I'm going to steal it
No,
because I
or
think it's important because I And here's the thing, I'm a rethinker. I'm a lifelong learner. I am constantly reflecting on my practice, and I can feel it. It's just trying to find that balance so that I can actually coach teachers in what they need to do next, school them on what they're doing wrong, but also not come across as necessarily the heavy. So,
you're
do you know
not
what I
the
mean?
yeah you're not the heavy, but you're challenging thinking. And that's the thing about, think like a scientist. It's always challenge our thinking. So if you don't mind, I would love to give you this thing, because you have such expertise in assessment, and I know your work, and I'm familiar with it. I can't wait to learn more about it, get even more knowledge about it. One of the things I've been asking about there, and one of the things that I've kind of even gotten sometimes in the standards-based grading world, I ask teachers, are you giving an assessment or a test? And people kind of look at me and go, well, what's the difference? And I said, well, a test tells me, did you get what I taught you? But an assessment tells me, where are you in your learning? And I've been doing that a lot with my teachers that I work with, especially with DOK, with creating assessment, to say, do you want to create an assessment or do you want to create a test? What that does twofold is, number one, it tells me, am I creating something that is testing or assessing still whether they learned what I taught them and whether it addresses the standard? Because I see a lot of assessments out there, or quote assessments, that aren't even aligned to the standard. Okay. But if I have that as an assessment, that's okay, because I can assess at a range up to and through the standard. So if I have an assessment that is acceptably aligned means that it assesses half the standard, or it's insufficiently aligned, where it only assesses one part of the standard or one thing about the standard. That's okay because it tells me where they are in their learning. But I have to decide whether I'm giving them a test. And if I'm giving them a test, then every item better address and assess that standard fully. Or am I giving them an assessment, which means I could assess it. If the standard is a DOK 3, I can give them items at a DOK 1, I can give them items at a DOK 2, or I can give them items at DOK 3. So that's what I think I'd like people to really reconsider. Can't tell people, but it's funny because people push back, go, no. Now they're becoming that prosecutor, preacher, politician. Now I'm asking to think like a scientist, because sometimes I wonder if our summative assessments, quote, that we give at from state agencies, or in your cases, provincial agencies, is that really an assessment or is that a test? Because you got one shot, one opportunity. And who are they assessing? Are they assessing the kids or are they assessing us as teachers?
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I think assessment is information, right? It's what we do with what we're receiving from our students. You know, is it just going to be this one-off thing? I think there is this disconnect between understanding is assessment everything that we're supposed to be plunking into a grade book and then letting it like puke up a percentage, as opposed to am I setting the stage for students to have this foundation and learn this skill or this and or this content over a long period of time? So when I build, for example, when I build my proficiency sequences or proficiency scales, once I do that, I'm really intentional about it. So all that stuff that leads up to the first level, I have this barometer to see who's now in my classroom and what do they need just to get to that first level. And I will intentionally actually teach to every single level in the form of practice so that kids actually, first of all, get the opportunity to reach their potential. Before then, I bring in this new content and they're able to now practice, work on that skill, see where they're at. And, you know, it was actually interesting to think about what you're saying and kind of aligning to something that I've actually been rethinking on approaching teachers is, you know, are we getting teachers to simply just get kids to do corrections on something that we've spoon-fed them all the feedback for? You know, and then we level them up accordingly, or are we giving them brand new learning opportunities to actually see if it's sticking, right? If we're actually making it stick, right? And I think that's the big thing about learning. We actually want to see if we're making it stick,
And that's the
right?
interesting thing, because a lot of people think about with remembering that remembering is bad. Well, remembering, kids don't remember stuff, they remember experiences. Okay. That's why I say true assessment is communicative. Okay. You can give me the answer. Great. That's what I call a DOK 1. But can you explain how you got that answer? Well, no. Okay. Well, now I have to assess you on that because that's true learning. Can you justify and verify why that answer is correct or incorrect? No. Okay. Well, that's a DOK 2 and DOK 3. DOK 4 is, can you explore and extend different and deeper ways you could use what you've learned? Now, this is actually what happens in the realm of gifted, because with gifted, they think all the kids need to demonstrate their learning at a DOK 4. And I say, no. Okay. The de delivery intensity of your instruction depends upon the demand of your standards and the strengths of your students. Gifted kids can do a DOK 1 easy quickly and do a DOK 4 easily. Why? Because they can give you the answer. Doesn't matter how hard or complex it is. And a DOK 4, they can make all these credible connections and extensions with it. Where gifted kids struggle is that they can't explain. They struggle. That's that they can't, but they struggle to explain how they got that answer and why that answer is correct or incorrect. And that's in terms of that. So when I talk to gifted and I talk about assessment of gifted, yes, DOK 1 and DOK 4, the ease and simplicity of it is what makes them gifted. But the complexity is, or the difficulty becomes, can they explain how they got that answer, or can they justify why they're correct or incorrect? Because one of the things gifted kids struggle with is communicating their thinking. That's what makes them gifted a lot of times. That divergent thinking is so divergent that they can't explain or justify to you how or why they see things. You know, that's the difference between, like, I use a lot of Joe Renzulli's work for reference. That's the difference between being gifted and gifted and talented. Like I said, gifted is I have divergent thinking, but gifted and talented is I have divergent thinking and I'm able to use my talents to express it. So if you think about comparisons, so you like movies. Steven Spielberg is gifted and talented because he sees the world in a certain way and he's able to share his vision in a way people can understand because he's a talented filmmaker. He could have become a writer, he could have become a musician. That could have been his talent, but his gift is what he's. And if you ever watch The Fablemans, that's the perfect definition of what gift and talent is. Because you remember, he saw things and he used the camera to capture what he saw. George Lucas is gifted because his ideas are so divergent that he needs people to help understand what his vision and what his thinking is. I mean, if you ever read the original script of the Star Wars, it's not what came out. Because, and what over time, when he had more power and decision making, he got to do what he wanted to do. So actually, the Ewok battle at the end of Return of Jedi, what if I told you that was actually supposed to be Wookiees at the end of Star Wars?
Oh, I heard about that. I have some Star Wars fans in my house.
Oh, there you go. Well, and that's the thing. If you look at the trilogy, episode one, two, and three, why a lot of people couldn't understand it was because that's George Lucas, the way he sees things. Like he sees episode one as a children's movie. And some people are going, huh, I can see that, or I can't. Or he said, Jar Jar Binks is a character that children would like. And that's who he made it for, children. And some people go, huh, I can't see that. Or, yeah, I can see that. The second one, the romance, people felt kind of awkward around. It's like, I'm not really gravitating towards that. The third one is, the episode three is what everyone wanted. But that's the, and it was easy to communicate that. But that's what it means to be a difference between gifted and talented. Gifted means I see the world in a certain way. And gifted and talented means I see the world in a certain way and I use my talents to express what I see. And I
Eric,
said, go ahead.
historically speaking, do you think teachers are trapped in DOK1 land?
I'm going to tell you this, and this is going to be a rethink. What if I told you that every teacher is teaching at a deeper DOK level? Okay, because they can explain what they're teaching. That's a DOK too. They can justify and verify why their teaching is accurate or think critically about it, DOK three, or ask what if. That's always think critically, but ask what if or give arguments. And they can make incredible connections with what they're teaching to things in a student's lives or other things in the world or other things in the curriculum. So what if I said, here's a rethink. Every teacher is teaching at a DOK 2, 3, or 4, but that's not the question we need to be asking. What if I said the question is not what is the level the teacher is teaching at, but what's the DOK level the students are learning at?
That's
When I
it.
do a presentation, it's a DOK 4. Why? Because I extended DOK, I wrote a book about it, I made this creative presentation. I am teaching at a DOK 4. But when you're just sitting there listening to the audience, you're at DOK 1. So what's the level? So the question we need to ask is, and I don't think teachers are so much stuck. I think there is a discomfort of turning it over to the students. I think there's control. I can control my classroom. Look, I used to go into classrooms when I was an administrator, and my classroom as a teacher was noisy, but it was productive noise. Like they moved me outside when I taught at Horizon High School here in Scottsdale, Arizona. They moved me outside by the gym, by the workout room, because everyone could have seen Eric's room is. And then my principal came in and said, "What's the noise?" And he came in. He's like, "Oh my gosh, all the kids are working. And they're discussing and they're talking and they're moving. Where's Eric? You couldn't see me."
That's right.
I was like John Cena, the John Cena teacher. You can't see me. So the thing is that it was productive noise. So if I see a classroom that's productive noise and I see kids actively working, that's where you're going at a deeper DOK level. And the more the kids talk, the deeper the DOK level you go. And that's hard for kids because kids are taught not to talk. And
sit
kids are,
still, sit in rows,
right.
Do your work. If you're being quiet, you're engaged when they might just be being compliant.
Right, right. And even if, like, you know, it's like I even say the same thing about gifted. When I have a parent comes up and goes, oh, my child's gifted, probably not. They're high ability, high potential, they're diligent, they're smart, and they're intelligent. When I have that parent comes up to me and goes, oh my gosh, the thinking of my kid, I don't know what to do with that kid, and what that kid's probably gifted.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing. So when you talk about that, I know I was talking about the gifted, but teaching, I think teachers, I think we need to become more comfortable and confident in why we do, how we do, what we do. And I think we need to have some productive struggle and creative frustration, allow the kids to experience that. The problem when I say that is, what do the people hear? They hear struggle and frustration. They don't hear productive and creative. And that's okay, because that's true learning. So turn it over to the kids. Let them start explaining. Let them start justifying or verifying. Have them talk amongst themselves. Not think pair share, but talk amongst themselves. Give them the answer and ask them, why is it correct or incorrect? Or ask a what if. Ask them what else you can do. Have them go out into the world and bring it back. That's where we can get out of that DOK one. And it's not a rut, because if that's what the standard demands and that's where the students are, then that's the way you should be. But you always should be having them rising, reaching, and going beyond what I call that DOK bar.
I want to just back up just a little bit. And where did this come from? Where did this wisdom about DOK and asking good questions come from? Because, like, you know, you've already talked about how you, you know, you, I've heard it in other podcasts and even in this episode already, where, you know, I know you were an educator, even though it wasn't your intention to become an educator, and you were an administrator, and then everything kind of shifted gears. But, you know, where did this come from? Like, who inspired you, or what happened in your journey to have you take that turn and really embrace the messiness of depth of knowledge and asking good questions?
Well, let's start with questioning. My dad, Fred Francis, is who inspired me. He was a questioner. He had the most brilliant inquiring mind that I ever met. And still, probably, I mean, this guy, my dad was just a brilliant man who always asked questions. And he taught me how to question everything. Ask why, what if, why not, what do you mean? That's actually become my trademark. What do you mean? Is that anytime you say something, I'll say, what do you mean? And that's not just academic. That's actually even social setting. Like, if, you know, somebody said, hey, Eric, you know, you did this. Well, what do you mean? Or, hey, Eric, you know, I heard this about you. What do you mean? Or, Eric, you made me feel this way. What do you mean? That question actually got me out of some interesting situations with parents. Well, you don't like my child. What do you mean? You're mean to him. What do you mean? You're not sensitive. What do you mean? Because I need examples and evidence so I can either explain myself or apologize. And that's where questioning really became. When I became a teacher, you know, we're taught mostly in a generalization that we question to assess. My whole thought process is that, yeah, you can do that. But really, what if we question to activate advance? True Socratic teaching. You know, Socrates, like I like to say, didn't put everyone in the Colosseum. You're the inner circle, you're the outer circle. You can talk, you can't talk. I'm going to give this question. It was wild. He could walk in and go, basically, like, if I was Socrates, I used to do my classroom, I'd walk in, I'd say, so how did Edgar Allan Poe create an entire genre of literary fiction? Or I'd say, so what if we could create football plays using linear equations? Or how could you analyze, interpret data on natural hazards to forecast future catastrophic events and inform development technology to mitigate their effects? I don't expect you to answer. In fact, if you say, I don't know, oh, I love that. Because some people say, I don't know, or IDK, that's their way of getting out of it. No, sometimes it's communication to say, you know, I really don't know. So what I've even been trying to do lately is, even with adults in my PD, I'll put something up there on the screen and I'll say, What does this mean to you? What stands out for you? And what are you not sure about? And I have people discuss, and they discuss. I call it turn and talk, or talk amongst yourselves, like Linda Richman. Feeling verklempt, talk amongst yourselves. So that's where it really became from, is questioning with that. Questioning for teaching was because I was spending all this time teaching, and my kids were just spending all this time listening. And I used to teach out of my content area. So my kids would say to me, you know, you're not a math teacher, you're not a science teacher, you're not a history teacher or PE teacher. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. So here's the deal. I'm going to teach you the basics and ask you a question. You guys go out and get the information and teach me. And I let them use their phones and responsibly until they chose not to use it responsibly. And then I say to them, do you want me to treat you like an adult, or do you want me to treat you like a child? And that's even the thing. Like, everything I try to do is I try to question. And sometimes I fall into that trap where I'll make, you know, declarative statements, or I'll make presumptive statements. And I actually find out that that actually gets me in trouble more than asking questions, because people will hear half the story. I'll say I can walk on water, and they'll say, well, because you can't swim, you know. So it's that questioning that also led me into DOK, because when, here in the States, when we all shifted to Common Core, what really made these standards different is that they assess students at the level of thinking using Bloom's and the depth of knowledge demanded using Webb's DOK levels. And we were all given this DOK wheel. And the state departments that all trained us, because that's who did it, they said, this is what you use to teach and learn for DOK. And I said, you said it's about what comes after the verb. Yes. Then why is this wheel full of verbs? Well, this is DOK. Well, why is this wheel full of verbs? You know, all of a sudden, like, they got frustrated because I wanted to understand. I took this deep dive and I realized why that wheel's inaccurate. And it's not just that, you know, the citation's inaccurate. You know, Norman Webb now had put out an article in Edutopia that said, this thing is inaccurate. Don't use it. It's misleading. So the thing with DOK when it first started was trying to help people understand what DOK is, because the shift in how we look at standards, because we typically look at the nouns and the verbs, the great Ainsworth method, but these are new standards. That method worked, and it still works, with what we used to call here in the States, No Child Left Behind standards. Okay. And even, you know, with your standards up there in BC, because you have the competencies and you have the content, that works. But what makes these standards different is that they're contextual, in that they address and assess what exactly and how deeply the students have to use the cognition and content. So during a pandemic, when I got torpedoed, I had no work, and I said, you know, I'm going to write my DOK book. And I didn't want to write a book on what depth of knowledge is. I wanted to write a book on what depth of knowledge could be. I asked Solution Tree, can we put out this book, come out after the pandemic? Because I look at this as not only a post-pandemic book. And that's the thing that's the danger about DOK, because DOK is so associated with Common Core, and we're moving away from that here in the States. And because, you know, if I said this is a pandemic book to address the pandemic, well, we're now about 2 or 3 years in. We still have the effects, but, you know, EdWeek just had a thing about the top 10 buzzwords teachers don't want to hear. And one of it is COVID and learning loss. I wanted to write a book that not only explained what DOK is, but what DOK could be. And what's happened with DOK is that it's evolved. You talk about a rethinking. It was never, ever supposed to be what it's become or how it's been used. It's kind of like the Danielson framework. You know, if you talk to Charlotte Danielson, she'll say, you're not using my framework to the extent that to what I originally designed it for. So, you know, Norman Webb created as a criterion for alignment studies, which is how you should use it, and which is the authentic, this is the accurate way, this is the original way to use it. Karen Hess took it and made a measure for cognitive rigor. And in fact, Karen's been working a lot with it to say, if you want to determine the rigor of your standards, curricular activities, and assessment items, that, you know, this is why you use DOK as a measure of cognitive rigor. I've taken both of their work and honored, hopefully, both of their work, because you have to honor the research and who comes before you. And what I did was I turned into a method and model for teaching and learning, which ironically Karen likes. Norman Webb is not crazy about that, because he doesn't think it's a method model for teaching and learning. He's a psychometrician, he's a test maker, and I respect that. But how can we rethink it? So what I did with it is that I've turned it into a method and model and mindset to make sure that teaching and learning is standards driven. You start with the standard, socially, emotionally supportive. You tier to where the students are, and student responsive, that you build upon their strengths so that you can rise to reach and go beyond it. So my thing with DOK, I didn't invent it and I didn't create it. I never, ever would ever come to say, I know DOK better than anybody else. But I kind of innovated it in a way to then say, this is what people want from it. This is what people want to do with it. What could I do? Kind of being that politician, interestingly. What could I do to make it DOK, not only accurate and appropriate, but also accessible for teachers? Because if you come in and you talk the language of DOK or like the real heavy stuff about DOK, you're going to lose teachers. But when I hopefully come in and I explain it, and I sometimes still lose teachers with it because it's really a different way of looking at things. But when I look at it and I try to make it where it's like, okay, how can I keep on simplifying it, that rethink? So where it's accessible. So in a nutshell, in a big nutshell, because I just gave you a big long answer.
That's okay. I'm loving this.
Questioning is inherent as to why I am who I am, what I am. And I thank my father, Fred Francis. In my next book, I actually, a person I wanted to write the foreword for couldn't, didn't have time. So I said, can I take the page and just thank my father and talk about how he made me this, why I am who I am, what I am? And he said, sure. So he was a questioner. A little bit of background, my dad lost his legs in a car accident in 1965. He was a double amputee. But he was one of the leaders of the American civil rights movement for the disabled here. And the reason why he did and why he was able to do what he did was because he asked questions. Because he said, how is this equitable if we to get an education if we can't get into the building? How is this equitable that you're giving us this opportunity, you're denying this opportunity to us. And that's what he was a questioner, and it drove people crazy, but it made him, it's just a brilliant man. He's not with us anymore, but just such a brilliant man. And he's the one who made me a questioner and also a love for learning or trying to figure out how I can make what I'm learning something lovable, something enjoyable, and that's hard, So in a nutshell, that's how this, that's how, why, that's why I do how I do what.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story. It's just so beautiful. I see so much alignment in when you're sharing about asking good questions in class, and even as you're talking to students and asking them to go deeper by asking, what do you mean? You're pushing, you're pushing, you're pushing. And that is symbolic, I think, of depth of knowledge, right? You're actually getting them to think beyond just the answer. It's not just put up your hand, give them the answer next. What do you mean? Tell me more. Tell me more. There's a simile here, right? Great. Okay. Tell me why that, why is the simile, why is it a simile? Can you explain it, right? Can you push? Can you go further in that kind of thing?
Right. Let's say, what if it was a metaphor? What would be the difference in the effect of the metaphor? Okay. What kind of simile can you create? How could you create a song? How could you create a story that's a metaphor for this, that, or the other thing? That's a deal. So that's the thing. And it's really funny because we don't, it's funny because we talk about, teaching is about questioning. It isn't, it isn't, because I can ask you questions that you can ask, yes, answer yes or no, or true and false. So yeah, I'm asking questions, but those are bad questions.
Yeah, that's not inquiry, right?
But the thing is also, even inquiry, if I tell you to go do inquiry, that's not inquiry.
No.
Okay. Inquiry starts with a question. True inquiry starts with a question. And there's actually, and I'm going to talk about this in my next book, there's actually now, we know the traditional forms that were actually developed in the 1960s and 70s by Joe Schwab and Marshall Herron, confirmation controlled inquiry, structured inquiry, guided inquiry, open free
Oh, yeah.
inquiry.
Yeah. Trevor McKenzie does a lot of that in his books, too.
Yeah. And that's where it came from. That's where the base of Trevor's books is based upon the four levels of inquiry that Joseph Schwab and Marshall Herron came up with in the 60s and 70s. And what he did was, in a creative way, made that pool. And that's great. But there's actually three more that have just come out in the last 2000s. Again, that new data and information. There's coupled inquiry, which combines guided and open free inquiry. There's authentic inquiry, which is completely student-centered. You know, hey, what do you want to learn today? What questions do you have about what I'm teaching you? That's authentic inquiry. And then there's this thing called synergistic inquiry. I want to make sure I got that correct. It was developed by this science teacher. Unfortunately, his name escapes me right now. And I cite him in the book. I make sure about that. But synergistic inquiry is when the teacher participates in the inquiry with the students. This is where the teacher, this is a lot where you would do service learning. This is where if you had like a student government or student council with a facilitator or an advisor, the teacher participates in that inquiry. They don't lead it, but they're a participant of it in it, in that there might be things the teacher can access for the students that the students may not have the capability, the confidence to go and access that, like calling up an organization or doing a deep dive in
Oh, yes.
research. So,
Nice.
but the teacher is also participating in it because the teacher doesn't know what the outcome is going to be. So that's really, that synergistic inquiry is a DLK4. And that's again, that's extending, what Trevor's book with Inquiry Mindset, it's great. And when what he did with the pool and what he did with Schwab and Heron's four levels of inquiry. But since then, I mean, that's why I did this deep dive. I said, what are examples of inquiry-based learning? And I found this coupled inquiry. I think a gentleman named Dunkhase came up with that. And then authentic inquiry, which is more of a highly student-centered,
Yep.
student-driven.
Yep.
The teacher's not even involved. It's kind of like back in the day, we had this thing called the open classroom, where, all like, in the late 60s, they go, hey man, what do you want to learn today? All right, man, go,
Yeah.
fly with that. They didn't have the internet
Yeah.
like this. They had the encyclopedias like, hey man, what do you want to learn today? Man, I want to learn why this. Okay, go learn with that, man. Cool, peace. You know,
Yeah.
that's what that
Go
was like.
Google it. Go find, well, not Google it back
No,
then,
not
but
back there. Go
no,
get
not back then, but
I
go
got
find out.
a bunch of Encyclopedia Britannicas over there, man. You
Yeah,
know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
and that's that authentic. And it's really like what and that's what makes that that's what teaches children to be questioners because children are naturally questioners. If you've ever been with the child between the age of 2 and 5, the question they ask is why. And as much as we adults think
Yeah.
that they're trying to test us, they're trying to learn.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when we go to school, and it's really funny because I say this, and some people go, well, good teachers do this. And I go, yeah, absolutely right. But I'm talking in sweeping generalizations. You know, I mean, there's some people who are exemplary of what we do, and there's some people who are major league players, but we want every teacher to be a major league player. And some we need to help guide and support, and they don't understand or they don't know how to. So most of the times when we go to school, questioning is how adults and children interact. But now it's the adult who's asking the question, and it's the student who has to answer.
Yeah.
Answer to learn, they answer
Yeah.
or actively and advance their learning. They're answering because they have to be, their learning is being assessed. So now the pressure on is to be correct
Oh,
or
yeah. Yeah,
okay. I
yeah.
distinguish that. Correct is irrefutable. 2 + 2 = 4, but I can make it 5 if I add one more or use addition, decimals, and rounding. That's right. See what I mean? Oh, can I defend and justify that? Can I do that? And that's the thing about questioning as well, is that questioning is uncomfortable and questioning is creative. And that's why even in my next book, I talk about how if the kids are going to get the answers from ChatGPT, then why don't we get the questions from ChatGPT?
Yeah. Yes.
At the same time, Shan, we can't just say, oh, wow, there's a good question. And ChatGPT said it's a DLK3. First of all, I don't know who they're referencing.
Yeah, I've tried. Don't go by
Yeah.
it.
And just because it's like this, it's like you don't want the kids to get the answers off ChatGPT because that's not authentic. But you're okay to go on teacher pay teacher to pull a worksheet just because it
Yeah.
said it addresses the standard. You know, I mean, you still need to look at that with a critical lens. You need to look at that with your instructional talent. And with your instructional talent, what I mean is that question really first of all, even a question. Because if it's an objective or a directive, that's not a question. That's do it. Okay. And the simplest way to put it is put how could you in front of that. But secondly, is that question really at the DLK level that ChatGPT or these new things like Magic School or these other programs say, oh, we have DLK questions that AI will generate for you. You still got to look with a critical lens. Is that really a DLK three? And number three, man, could I come up with a better question? That's, I mean, when I look at questions, I say, oh, that's a good question. And then I'll go, oh, man, I can come up with a better question than that.
I love, oh, I got really fired up. You probably see it in my face when you're talking about those different inquiry pieces because I've done that, right? Like I've done the heavy lifting where at the start, I'll give my kids a question to teach them what a good question might look like. How can we learn about medieval people through their deaths? Right. And it's a really great big question. And we end up looking at like effigies and tombstones. Anyway, we move on and I start relinquishing more and more control and then getting them to come up with their own question. So I know you've already answered my next question is your work in coaching teachers to ask good questions that lead to deeper thinking by the student is also modeling for the student how they can ask questions of their own.
Exactly.
And I've had students come up with something that they're passionate about where they have to create their own question and it's connected to a charity or something like that, something they want to learn about how they can, make the world a better place, something like that. And I end up being part of it because I'm trying to help them like connect with the different charities and helping them set up the interviews and watching them go from being these meek little mouse students who expected to come into a class and just, memorize stuff and write tests and repeat to actually being fully engaged. And I feel with every fiber of my being, it is up to me to push kids out of their comfort zone. They can become so comfortable. And right now, post-COVID, even more inside themselves, and there's so much anxiety about what's going to happen next. And it's, coaching them to, talk to each other and ask these questions and think again. And you use, what do you mean? And I use tell me more. And I always catch them off guard when I say that. They'll answer a question, I'll be like, tell me more. And they're like, oh, okay, she's making me talk a little bit more. And I'm trying to get them to go deeper. And I know tell me more isn't always the best thing, but it's, because it might just be adding more as opposed to going deeper. So, but it's still really trying to get them right and push them and
It's
really
whatever,
think.
well, not even just even cognitive, but also communicative, you know. The thing is this, and I sometimes get this, and I never want to say like my way is right, everyone else's way is wrong, and I want to make sure I'm not communicating that. I mean, tell me more is good, but I would also question to say, how does that sound to the person you're talking to? Because if I said to you, hey, tell me more, okay, now I'm like, or hey, tell me more, or it's like you're telling you to do something, but if I say, what do you mean? That's the invitation. See what I mean? So, or, and I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong, but I'm saying like real, like you ever wanted to be like, you may, and sometimes even what do you mean? And I have a thing, some people like, how do you know better? I'm not crazy about that because that's to me, I'm pushing. I feel like I'm challenging you. I want to invite, I want to use questions to invite you into a conversation. And the amazing thing is, and from what I understand, I mean, where you are in British Columbia, isn't it inherent in and embedded in your curriculum instruction that inquiry is a big focus of what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, that's part of the
It
reason why
is.
that's what how Trevor got started. That's the
And I've always been and I've always been fascinated by it, but again, it's when you talk about embracing the messy and wrestling with discomfort,
right.
it's shifting to that because there still is such pressure, and I think it's, I don't know if concocted is the right word, It's this pressure they feel to, try to get through the content. And as much as they would, I hear, well, I'd really like to do the inquiry thing, but, I just don't have time. And I don't think it's about time. I think that might actually be a knee-jerk response to, I'm not sure I know how. And to add to that, there really is a big time factor right now because we do have things like a new reporting order, and I'm watching. And teacher burnout is real, and we have a worldwide teacher shortage, and teachers are losing their prep time, and it is feel they're very comfortable in the way that they have been teaching for a very, very long time. So to take the time, even though some of us are modeling what wonderful results we're going to get from students, it's too uncomfortable right now. And yet,
But if you're looking at, but if you're looking at inquiry as frosting on a cake and not the flavor of the cake, then you're not doing inquiry correct.
That's
Okay.
right.
If you know, if you're looking at, the chocolate or the vanilla frosting you put on the cake, okay, I want you to think of inquiry, I mean, like a Twinkie. All right. Like the Twinkie is the cake, but the frosting in it, that's the part of it. That's the inquiry, because that gives it the taste, you know. Or when you have like a devil's food cake or something like that, it's not the frosting, it's the flavor inside the cake. The cake is your standard, and the inquiry is what gives it the flavor. So it's not something extra. If you want to just basically do pound cake, then you do pound cake, okay? But don't sit there and say, I got to add frosting, and that frosting is inquiry. No, the inquiry is flavor.
No, and I hear teachers say, easier said than done. And I'll be like, well, I think it's easier to avoid than to attempt, right? And yet at the same time, if we come back to how much someone wants to push, right? Like I've invested a lot of time to kind of get to where I am and using inquiry and having that as basically just part of my classroom culture. Every kids know when they come into my room, learning's going to look different.
Because
Learning's going to look way different. And I love it. It fires me up. It's unnerving for the kids at first, but it would come back to the teachers. It's, that and what they already know. It's this feeling like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But the system is so broken.
Shannon,
It's
what you are, and have you ever heard of the theory of diffusion and innovation, diffusion innovation by Everett Rogers? We know it, but we don't know the specifics of it. So it's a bell curve, okay? And on the far left, at 2.5% of your population are what we call the innovators. They are wild in their thinking, and that's what you are. You're an innovator, okay? Because basically it's like, man, this, and you take it and you can create with it, okay? In real world perspectives, these are the people who sleep out for the Apple iPhone, the next Apple iPhone. Or these are people who sleep out for the first showing of that Star Wars movie. You know, they could see it later, but they got to be first. And that's what the innovators are.
They're the ones leaning in already.
Right. Then you got the early adapters who are willing and wanting to make the change. But that's 18 to 20% of your population. Then they talk about this chasm that happens after early adopters and moves into what we call early majority and late majority. These are the people, early majority is 34% of your population. And they're the people like, oh, I'm not too sure about this. And late majority is, well, let me see how this works for someone else before I do it. And laggards are like, nope. I like my dittos. I have my dittos. I like my rotary phone. And I'm not making fun, but I'm saying, like, making fun of. But what I'm saying is that that's the way we need to look at things. And we need to look at how do we create that movement. Schools need to look at who are their early adopters, not their innovators. Because people like you and me, and we think that we say we're innovators as a compliment. Like, people understand that sometimes compliments are a curse because we're wild, we're disruptors. Okay. That's like why I say, like, I'm unidentified gifted. Oh, really? I said, no, you think that's a compliment. No,
my
it's
God.
outside of
It's
the
like,
turf.
I can't help myself but eat, sleep, breathe this stuff.
Well, there's even a thing out there. It's a theory that came out. I think his name was Simon Proctor. I'm not sure his name, but and this is a lot of things because I've been reading this stuff because I'm like, man, why isn't my message not getting through sometimes to some teachers? And I'm trying to read. That's why I got into Sinek. That's why I got into Grant. I got into Gladwell, and I'm reading these people. So there's this thing called the curse of knowledge, where you know something so deeply that you just can't understand and believe that other people don't know it as well. Okay, and that's called the curse of knowledge. So what you want to do is you really want to know who your early adopters are in your school, because they're the ones who are going to make the change. They're the one Malcolm Gladwell's call the connectors, and I don't like the word salespeople, so we're going to call them champions, because they're going to work with it. They want to make the change. They're willing to make the change, but they're going to work with it. And then the early adopters are going to see, oh, it's working for that person. Okay, I'll start doing it. And the late adopters are going to go, oh, okay. That works for everybody else, so I'm going to go and do it. And the early adopters are like, I'll help you with this. And they're like, fantastic. The interesting thing in schools is we get this unnecessary stress and anxiety over we need to get the laggards on board. And I'm going to be bold enough and say this. No, you don't.
Yeah, just leave him alone.
Not even leave alone, but Shannon, we need to tell the laggards, we need to say this to them. We need to be brave enough to say this and say, this is the direction we're going. We understand this is uncomfortable for you. We understand maybe you think you may not want to make, you may not be able to do this. We will provide you with the support you need to make this as comfortable for you as possible. Here's the thing. We're going in this direction. You have a choice. You can join us on this journey, or you don't. And that's fine, because maybe this isn't the place for you anymore. And that's the thing. Sometimes we need that. I know there's a teacher shortage, but I think we need to have a bold conversation and go, you know what? This may not be for you. Well, it's working for who? For me. Okay. How about the kids? Well, I get some kids, but okay. What about the ones who don't? Well, I taught it. Okay. And I'm being very general. I'm being very
No,
sincere.
and I totally get it.
But we need to talk to these people and say, these people who are laggards, and sometimes they're laggards and they can't help but being laggards. Okay. And we can't fault them for that, because this is why they know how they know what they know.
That's right. It's the system, right?
Right. We need to say, this is the direction thing schools are going. The school is going. You can join us in this journey, or you can choose not to. And that's okay. There might be some place where they follow what you want to do. And if they don't, maybe you need to rethink. Okay. But here's what you can't do. Number one, you can't resist. And what I mean by resist, which means like you can't fold your arms and say, I don't want to do this, because it's not about what you want, it's about what kids need. And number two, you can't disrupt. We're going in this direction. Don't try to knock us off the tracks. I know you've seen the pendulum swing. I've been teaching since the mid-90s. I have lived through the, push for outcomes-based learning, when everybody was doing multiple intelligences and differentiation was hot, and Kagan cooperative learning was the way to go. Okay. I was teaching during No Child Left Behind, where it came, about it's about the test, it's about the test, it's about the test, high stakes testing. I was providing professional development during Common Core, where we were talking about college and career readiness, whatever that is. It's actually half the pie of the post-secondary readiness theory that Collins came up with, where you also have job ready and work ready. Now I'm not even sure what we're doing. Okay. When I first saw Rick Warmer, I'll never forget, it was during No Child Left Behind. He said the pedagogical pendulum swings this way and this way. Now it's swinging both ways for No Child Left Behind.
Oh, that's good.
Now it's kind of like this cuckoo clock, where it's just kind of spinning and going cuckoo, 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 because we don't even know. Okay. And it's not that we were wrong now. It's that once upon a time we were right, but we need to rethink and reconsider whether we're still right.
You're blowing my mind, buddy. Holy. That's it. Because I hear that a lot, even from educators. It's like, oh, well, eventually the pendulum will swing back. And, because they've seen enough over 20 or 30 years. We could keep talking about this. I know
Well,
it's
education doesn't.
so fascinating. I.
Education reforms. It doesn't
Yeah,
innovate. It
that's
reforms.
right. Yeah.
What's the science of reading? It's the reading wars from the 1990s. I thought we settled that back in 1999.
Yeah.
What is SEL? We don't talk about Fight Club, but it's actually affective learning, which was basically
Yes.
a research form of learning that arose out of the 60s and 70s. And when I talk about this, people are surprised there's a Bloom's taxonomy for affective learning. What? There's a
Yeah.
taxonomy that
Yeah.
addresses SEL? No, we don't talk about Fight Club. It addresses affective learning. You know, that bad list, you know, top 10 buzzwords. That's why I get worried about buzzwords all the time, because it's like the Joker says in the first Batman with Michael Keaton, I found a name for my pain, and it is Batman. I found a name for my pain, and it is SEL. Science do have an
Yep.
answer for the pain because, well, pendulum swing. Now we're going this way.
Yeah.
What if basically we just said, let's take the best of all worlds and try to innovate something? That's what I tried to do with DOK.
Yes.
That's what
Yes.
I tried to do with questioning and inquiry.
Okay. So I want to dig in just a little bit here with our time remaining to depth of knowledge because okay, so
Okay.
here's the thing. So I'm looking at okay, so I've got a standard here. I came ready for you, Eric.
Hey.
So of course we have our curricular competencies and before we came on the podcast, so listeners know we kind of had our little impromptu podcast session talking about this anyways. But okay, so I'm thinking about asking a good question. One of the things I've heard you say is that we can actually reframe a standard to ask a good question as opposed to just making it like an I can statement.
Right.
Right? Okay. So if I have I'm an English teacher, English or drama. I have understand how literary elements, techniques, and devices enhance and shape meaning. Instead of just saying to the student, you know, I can understand how literary elements, blah, 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 I would switch that to a question like, how do literary elements, techniques, and devices enhance and shape meaning?
Wow, you're even
That...
more advanced than a lot of things than when I
Okay.
come to questioning. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So you got to activate what I call your inquiring mind. You
Okay.
know, Trevor calls it inquiry mindset. I call it the
Yep.
inquiring mind. Okay.
Okay.
I want you to take every standard, all your listeners out there, take every standard, and now you're going to put one of three question stems in front of it.
Okay.
Put how do you in front of that standard.
Okay.
Okay. Now you have an assessment question.
Oh, so like, how do you understand? Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Now, when you do this, you will at least demonstrate your learning at a DLK2 because you're going to have to explain your response and give examples of text. Okay. Now put another question stem in front of it. How can you? So now read what you have.
How can you understand how literary elements, techniques, and devices enhance and shape meaning?
Now you've set the instructional focus. You've changed that from a learning target, which you're putting words in kids' mouths, to basically inviting them into a conversation.
Okay.
So read that to me again.
How can you understand how literary elements, techniques, and devices enhance and shape meaning?
I don't know. I don't expect you to, because that's what we're going to learn today. Well, what
Gotcha.
does this mean to you? What does this say to you? And what stands out for you? What are you not sure about? Okay. What does this mean to you? What stands out for you? What are you not sure about? So I see literary elements. So what do you think you're going to do? You're going to be talking about literary elements. Now I need to see it in front of me. And we need to have either the good question, or if you're going to do learning targets, you need to have a learning target there, because a learning
Of
target is not for
course.
compliance, it's for communication. It
That's right.
tells the students what they need going to do. Or this question, it tells whoever's walking the room observing what's going on there. I can't tell you how many times I've observed classes. I've seen so many great things happening. I don't know what the focus and the purpose of the day was. Okay. The learning target tells me. The learning target also has me stay on target, because as a teacher, boy, I could go off all these different places, but the learning
Yeah.
target. Do you notice how when I'm talking, I'll go off on all these tangents, but I'll bring it back to what we discussed.
Yes.
That's what the learning target is. Like you asked this question about questioning, and blah, 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 and all of a sudden, boom, I brought it back to your question.
Yes,
That
yes.
was the target.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
Yeah.
the type of person, unfortunately, I think even with my teaching and my writing, I want to be more like Bon Jovi, who says, don't bore us, get to the chorus. But, you know, I want to talk about how Tommy used to work on the docks, Unionville strike, you know, I want to sing all that before I go into Living on a Prayer. So the thing is this, is that when I say, how can you, you're inviting them into the instruction. You're inviting them into the conversation. If I say I can, and in fact, I think her name is Shelby Clark. She's the one who came up with the whole thing with learning targets. I think
Yeah.
that's her. She's even saying, don't say that because it's letting kids to say, no, I can't.
Oh,
Okay.
really? Not
Yeah.
even with the levels? Because
No.
I use it with the levels so that they can identify that
She's
they
saying that
can.
basically, yes. Well, I agree with you, but that's the thing. So I even do what I call DOK learning targets, where I put the language of DOK in there. So I'll say for that one, I would say, how can you use information and basic reasoning to understand and everything you said there? And they have to stop to explain with examples. That's a DOK response. And I know it's a DOK too. But you see how I said I can use information and basic reasoning to understand? That's when I say you use learning targets. You need to make it really specific about what exactly and how deeply the kids are going to have to learn.
So now you said that I think there's a third.
That's right. So the
Okay.
third, thank you for
So I'm
keeping me.
bringing it back,
Thank you for keeping me
for
on task.
Eric.
You can tell what kind of teacher I was. My kids, my students used to do this thing. They used to play this game. How much can we get him off topic?
Oh, they
And
do with
can
me
he bring
too.
it back to the lesson?
Okay, so what's the third one, Eric?
That's right. The third one, don't bore us, get to the chorus. The third one is, how could you? Now I'm thinking strategically and I'm using complex reasoning.
Okay,
Whenever.
I got okay. I okay. So here's my problem, and I
Yes.
know I gave you questions in advance, and you probably saw my one question was, I go down this rabbit hole with DOK with standards, and one day I think it's a DOK one, and the next day I think it's a DOK three. Do I need to just let that go and think about how I can ask good questions? Because depending on how I frame the question is actually going to change the depth of knowledge for my curricular competencies.
Yes. Stop worrying about what DOK level you're at. Start being more concerned about how the students are responding.
Yeah,
I
because
think you.
I would. You even caught me one time. I remember, I think it was on Twitter X. I asked you a question about one, and I was like, I think this is a DOK one. And you had no idea. I had spent days unpacking that silly thing. And because in BC, for listeners, we have curricular competencies and content, our curricular competencies are really broad, but beautifully broad. But then, I can go down this rabbit hole. Today it's a DOK one, and then you came on, you chimed in, and I think it was just in a private message. No, I actually think it's a DOK four. And I was like, what the heck? And it's like, again, you and I cut from the same cloth, where I can just spiral unpacking one standard for weeks and weeks, but I'm gonna let that go.
I want
Like,
you
if
all to
I'm
know.
asking good questions, I
Right.
am doing what's best for kids.
DOK is the concept. Questioning is the process.
Okay.
DOK is the practice. Questioning is the process.
So
Okay.
instead of like putting all my standards in front of me and going, okay, what D or is there a place for this? What DOK are each of these? Just go with the questions, or what would you recommend?
You need to go. So remember when I said you start with the standard?
Yes.
That's the DOK level of the standard. It's okay to be a DOK one.
Yep.
Okay. Don't feel like I gotta get to a DOK three or DOK four. So this is what I say. Your
See, and I
response.
find that that's a content thing in
Yeah.
our in BC.
Well, that's also a good thing with teachers. I mean, we always
Yeah.
want our kids to go deeper. And
Yeah.
that's the thing. So the thing is this, is that I'm now even asking teachers. I'm like, okay, do you really think it's a DOK four? Is it really a DOK four, or do you want it to be a DOK four? I want it to be a DOK four. Great. I understand. But let's figure out what it is to get them to and through proficiency. Okay. A lot of times teachers want to go beyond, and that's awesome. But then that becomes a question. They did this in my class. They're not achieving this on the assessment. Why? Okay. Sometimes it's because you went beyond, but sometimes you went so beyond, you didn't even hit the standard. Well, I talked about theme. But did
Oh,
they
yeah. That's
determine
not
a
the
theme?
standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they determine a theme? That's the thing. Like, hey, they're all missing the standard. 80% are not proficient. Well, I taught them theme. Well, did you teach them how to determine a theme of story from details in the text? That's a DLK too, because you have to explain what it is and explain how the details support the theme. That's a DLK three. No, I
Right.
taught them what theme was and why. That's why they didn't
That
hit.
that's right, because it wasn't
So
even, they weren't even at the standard.
let's take this. Let's take the simplest DLK question I can ask you. DLK problem. What is 2 plus 2?
Four.
What do you mean?
Well, if I have two apples
Yeah.
and I add two apples, I'm going to have four apples.
What was the word you used? What was the action word? Add.
It, oh, okay.
So whenever
Okay.
that's what it means, so now you just answer the question, how can addition be used to find the sum of two numbers? My example was 2 plus 2. Now
Okay.
I'm going to give you 2 plus 3. What is 2 plus 3?
Five.
What do you think?
I've had enough coffee. I can answer this. Hi.
You see,
Thanks,
I'm over.
Eric. I'm
You
not a
see?
math teacher, you know, buddy.
Right. So, but you see, okay. So let me do this. Okay, who's the main character in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Charlie.
Good.
Or
DLK
Willie.
one.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Why is he the main character?
He's the one whose problem or goal the story revolves around.
Okay, good. That's a DLK2 question. What distinguishes Charlie from the other characters? Now he's a DLK2 because you can't
Oh
really
yeah.
talk about it. You got to
I
give me
can't. I
examples.
have to think about it, right? I can't just answer it like that.
Right. So then I'm going to say this to you. What if one of the other characters won the factory?
Oh my
What?
God. See, I love this. Oh my God, this
That's
is
a
great.
DLK3. Here's an argument. Is Willy Wonka cruel, eccentric, intentional, or all the above?
Nice.
Okay. So that's, see how I'm doing that? But you see how fast I'm going with that? So, but what the standard just says, analyze how complex characters develop over the course of a text. Okay. So I'm saying, well, why is he the main character? Because, okay, so what distinguishes Charlie? That would basically answer that question. Okay. That's a DLK too. You need to know for when it comes to DLK, there's teaching and testing for depth of knowledge, and there's teaching and
Okay.
learning for depth of knowledge. Teaching and testing is what exactly does that standard demand, and how deeply does it demand the students to understand and use their learning to demonstrate proficiency? Teaching and learning for depth of knowledge is what does the standard demand, where are the students, and how do I guide and support the students to rise to reach and go beyond that standard? A lot of us have forgotten what our standards have said and what they're saying. And that's understandable because I'm going to put the COVID reason in there. Look, no one was looking at their standards. And some teachers may go, well, I was. So great, you were the anomaly. Okay. The other thing right now, what's happening here in the States, I'm not sure if it's happening in BC, is that the standards are changing. Okay. But they're not throwing them out and giving new standards, they're tweaking them. So, determine a story from details in the text was the original standard. And I can look at that and say, okay, that could maybe be a DLK2 or DLK3 because they have to either explain with examples or examine and explain with evidence. Okay, does it need examples or evidence? Now it's saying, determine a theme of a story from details in the text and explain how the details support it. Now I know it's a DLK3 because that one objective. For math, it's saying fluently multiply, it used to say fluently multiply multi-digit numbers using the standard algorithm. One, DLK1, just answer it. Now it's saying multiply multi-digit numbers using an algorithm. Okay, now I got to choose which one and I got to explain which one I'm choosing and why. That's a DLK2. See, that's why it's
Yeah.
important. So I want you. I'm going to make a suggestion. My favorite Peloton quote, so if I'm a Peloton instructor, and I do this for coaching, I'm going to make a suggestion. You're going to make a decision. Start with your standards and then develop your curriculum instructions straight from your standards. Don't count on your curriculum. Don't say, I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what these kids need. No, you need to look at your standard.
That's right. Yeah.
If your responsibility, like I like to say, is to get the kids through the standard. If you tell me, well, I taught it, that's half your responsibility. Did the kids learn it? That's full responsibility. Your responsiveness is how do I get the kids to, through, and beyond the standard?
That's right.
That's a choice. So when teachers say to me, I don't have time to reteach this, I go, absolutely right. But somewhere along the line, that child experienced learning loss. Oh, don't give me this pandemic stuff. I said, I'm not, because you don't know why. Because guess what? If you do the research on learning loss, summer vacation causes learning loss.
That's right.
Bad scheduling causes learning loss.
Yeah.
Bad teaching causes learning loss. Bad.
Trauma causes learning loss. Yep.
Exactly. Bad times. I like to say my learn. I can quantify. I can point out when my learning loss was in my academic career. Third and fourth grade, my parents got divorced. I still struggle with multiplication and fractions because I really didn't pay attention. My world was falling apart. Okay. Do I really care about? Luckily, I was a literary kid, so I like science and social studies. And it wasn't until I met a teacher who said, "You're such a literary verbal kid. Tell me the story of the problem and how it ends." And that's when I started learning how to do math. Okay. Middle school, I had learning loss because I had some pretty mean teachers, really cruel. You know, I'll never forget the one teacher ripped a comic book, Legion of Superheroes number 305, out of my hands after I was done with the test. And he said, "Time to grow up," and ripped it in front of my face. You think I learned science that year? You know, math teacher tells me you don't have a head for math. You better figure out something else to do with your life. I am 53 years old. I'm still talking about something that happened to me in sixth and eighth grade. Those little moments. 10th grade, my friends were making destructive decisions. And my parents went to the video store and rented a movie called The Breakfast Club. And we watched it together. And my parents asked me, "Eric, is this what school is like?" And I said, "No, because the sequel would show them they're not friends anymore," and everything. And I fell apart. I just had a breakdown because I had such a hard time socially. And my parents pulled me out. And the only place they could pull me was either a military school, a disciplined military school. And I rocked the Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon mullet. No one was shaving that thing, even though my thing kind of, you know, my hair is high and tight in my old age. Back then, I didn't have a Joe Dirt, you know, mullet. I had, or Lynyrd Skynyrd mullet. I had a Joe Elliott, Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon mullet. You know, actually, most of the mullets that were really great came from Canadian rock singers like Honeymoon Sweet, you know, and all those guys. Those are Canadian rock bands. I was a huge fan of Canadian rock. And I had to go into his private school. It was a parochial school, and I had to learn a whole new math because their math was not the same. So that's learning loss. So you don't know what that kid is coming to your class with. And what I tell teachers to kind of get them to understand it is, let's take the attitude that no one is at grade level because they've never been to your grade before. So if you're teaching fifth graders and they were in fifth grade, you like they weren't, then they're not fit, then they're not grade level. What is grade level? The standard. That's the identity, the profile of a child academically, what a child in fifth grade needs to know when they're in math and working with fractions. Where are they on that pathway to proficiency? Do they know what a fraction is? No. Do they know what division is? Yes. Okay, good. Let's start there. Now, you learned that
Nice.
back in second, third grade. Did
Yeah.
anyone ever teach you the division, that fractions are division problems, and you build them? See what I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Oh,
hopefully that
no,
alleviates
that's,
pressure.
yeah, no, that's, it's great. I want to take, give you a couple minutes to plug your new book coming out.
Okay,
And
thank
you've
you.
mentioned it a few times already in the podcast, but what is the title of the book? What is it about? And when does it come out so we can all get our little hands on it? And for listeners, just before he does that, if you've not explored Eric's other books, I can't speak highly enough of them. Now that's a good question. And Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, make sure you head over to either your local bookstore or Amazon and pick that up.
So the next book, I went back to questioning and inquiry, and it's been since 2016 I wrote, you know, now that's a good question. And, you know, my thinking has changed a little bit. It still works. I mean, that's the thing I try to do with my books. I try to make it where it's not like not right. It's not a right now book. It's kind of like you can keep on using it. So this book is called Inquiring Minds Want to Learn, Posing Good Questions to Promote Student Inquiry. So where no, now that's a good question taught you what the questions are. This book teaches you and tells and explains how you can use those questions to engage in inquiry. I created a framework I call the Inquiring Minds Framework, in which the delivery is you hook them with a good question And then you go down four different and deeper pathways to inquiry. It's kind of the next extension of depth of knowledge because it shows you how you can teach and learn for depth of knowledge using through inquiry and by questioning. I'm pretty proud of it. It's getting some good reviews with it. It's from Solution Tree. So I published this one with Solution Tree again. And again, the whole thing is about it's not what is an inquiring mind, but what does an inquiring mind want? And that's what I talk about in that book. And how can you reinvigorate your inquiring mind? That's the big thing.
It.
Yeah.
Oh,
So
I'm super excited about it.
again, it's called Inquiring Minds Want to Learn. It's available to order. You go to Solution Tree or Amazon, and Inquiring Minds Want to Learn, posing good questions to promote student inquiry.
Nice. Oh, I'm super, super excited. I want to end with the elevator pitch question. So, are you ready for this?
I am.
Okay, so every episode I pose a question that is individualized just for you. I'm actually
Okay.
looking at it to see it's probably not a good question.
Oh, stop
Let's
it.
see.
Can
Let's
I
see
ask
if I
a yes or
put the
no
thought
quiz?
into
Dead
it. Let's see if
question.
I put the thought into it. But the idea is that, okay, Eric, you're on the third floor
Okay.
and an administrator gets on, presses six. You've got three floors and that
Okay.
elevator's not stopping. An administrator gets on the elevator and asks how he can just inspire his staff to start exploring good questions and depth of knowledge. What little tidbit do you give? Like, you're not going to solve the whole problem in three floors, but what little anecdote can you give them?
There's new data and information, and the circumstances and conditions have changed. We need to rethink, we need to review, and we need to reconsider why we do how we do what we do. No one is wrong. Everybody's right. The question is, are we still right, or do we need to reconsider why we do how we do what we do? Some people are going to want to do that. And some people are not. And I'm going to ask you this. This is a big question I'm asking a lot of times now with administrators. I know I'm getting to the sixth floor. We agree our kids need it, but what are we going to do when the teachers don't want it? That's a big question.
What do you mean, Eric?
What do I mean? I'll tell you exactly. This is going to be a bold conversation.
You do it now. So the elevators stop, but you know, the doors don't open. So now I want you to
Okay.
explain that.
Oh, the elevator got stuck. Now he's
And it
stuck in
got stuck
there.
there. The doors aren't opening. You've got time.
We cannot ask teachers to do one more thing. And they're stressed out and they're burnt out and they're tired. Okay. But we know what the students need. But sometimes what the students need, the teachers are not wanting. Okay. So you, as the leader, need to make sure that you're communicating to the teachers that this is about the kids. This is for the kids. Okay. This is something actually, Shannon, I'm having a conversation with a lot of schools. It's been very productive with it to say, are we in agreement that the kids need this? And they go, absolutely. Well, what do we do if the teachers don't want it? Well, what do you mean they don't want it? I go, why? What if they don't want it? Well, they should want it. Absolutely. This is great stuff. But what do you do if the teachers don't want it? And again, I go into that law of diffusion and innovation. Who are your innovators? Who are your early adopters who are willing and wanting to change? Who are your early majority? Who are your late majority? And who are your laggards? How are you going to address that? The other analogy I make is this. What does it take to be in great health? You need to eat healthy. You need to work out. You need to stop smoking. You need not to do drugs. You need to make sure that you have a healthy mindset. That's what you need. What if you don't want to? What if you don't want to work out? What if you don't want to eat healthy? You know what you need, but what if you don't want to? That's a hard thing. I empathize with teachers sometimes when I come in for PD, and I'll be honest with you and transparent with you because the one and done does not work with me. And I really try to work with schools to say, please don't bring me in for one and done. Because that's a lot of pressure on your teachers and it's a lot of pressure on me. In 2 to 6 hours, I have to not only introduce a concept, but I also have to make sure that their master's that concept, because there's a good chance they're never ever going to see me again. Will we do that to kids? No. Then why are we doing that to teachers? We need to have a relationship. You can't also tell everyone to come into a PD and say, you're all doing DOK or you're all doing questioning, and have them not understand why. And it's not my position to say, this is why. I'm not at your school. Okay. You're bringing me in to share ideas. I'm not selling them. I'm not a salesperson. Okay. And that's sometimes we have to have that talk with sometimes leaders, like, no, I'm not here to sell you DOK. I'm not here to sell you questioning. I'm here to share with you strategies. I sold it to you. You bought into it. You believe it. But then you need to be a leader. What are you going to do when that teacher says, eh, I don't want to do this? Or, yeah, this isn't for my kids. Okay. If you say that to me, this isn't for my kids, I'm sorry. You're hurting your kids because they're being assessed on this. Okay. And what if I said, Shannon, sometimes I get school leaders, I'm being very bold and transparent. I apologize if anyone's gasping or clicking their tongues. And if you are, I'm not talking to you. But I have sometimes some leaders who say to me, yeah, this is not for my kids. Or, yeah, my teachers can't handle this. Really? Wow. Or, yeah, they're not ready for this. Guess what? No one is ever ready for this. But my question I always ask is this, and I ask this not only about teachers, I ask this about kids. If not now, then when? Don't tell me, oh, they're in kindergarten in this. I get it. You know, I know what kindergarten, I got the book Yardsticks by Chip Wood over there, you know, that really says what those kids can do. And I recommend that book to really understand what the capability of a child is, can do at any grade between or age between 4 and 14. If not now, then when? Because it's never going to be the right time. And Rome was not built in a day, and neither will your understanding of DOK. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell people. Yeah. So I know I'm going to the penthouse on that one.
I really think that. I think you're more like Willy Wonka in the elevator.
Boom! All right.
It's boom. It's going out of the building. It's
they
like
start
this.
Singing like, if you want your teachers to learn, all you gotta do is give it. Don't try to resist it.
Oh, there you go.
You know,
there
you so, go. Nice. And that's the thing. And what you do is don't refuse it. You know, and that's the thing. This, the whole world changed after COVID because we rethought. Okay. Mm-hmm. Restaurants rethought how they did service. Takeout was not an option. Movies are rethinking how they basically get to audiences. Okay. Our behaviors have changed. So that has caused us to rethink. As education, the unfortunate thing is we have not had time to sit back and rethink. I am asking everyone right now, sit back and just rethink. I don't have time. Yes, you do. Okay. Yes, you do. There's time to get through and there's time for things to do. It is time for us to rethink. That's what I'm asking. You decide whether you want to reconsider.
Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. You've given me so much to think about.
Thank you for having
me. And so much to rethink.
There you go. That's the whole thing. I want people, when they think of stuff, that my why is basically, I do have my why, which is to ensure teaching and learning is standards-based, social emotional supportive, and student responsive, so that the experience is academic and affective for all. That's my why. As we know from Cynic, it's a mouthful and jumble. But my other why is to rethink and reconsider so that we keep on improving and learning.
Well, it's conversations like this that make me want to keep rethinking and keep learning.
And I hope you'll continue to have conversations with me off podcast, because this is
woo-hoo!
Great.
Woohoo!
Want to meet you for a while. I know your work. We've talked. It's nice to hear what 150 to 280 characters sound like beyond Twitter.
Yeah, no kidding.
To quote one of my favorite movies, is the start of a beautiful friendship. That's what I hope.
Oh, thanks so much. Right back at you.
You got it.
I'm honored to have produced this and all episodes of the Embrace the Messy podcast with Shannon Shinkle on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Tlalaytene First Nation. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and share it with a colleague or friend. Doing so will help others find the podcast. Know someone who embraces the messy and would make a great guest on the pod? Email me at embracethemessypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.